I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the feds charge a few Antifa rioters in Portland, plus some alt-left bloggers in Seattle are wishing death on ICE agents as President Donald Trump pledges to step up immigration enforcement efforts in blue cities. Also, we're going to talk about how the federal government's actions on West Coast EV mandates will actually save the working class. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. And welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Unfortunately, we have to start the show again today talking about the riots, Antifa, and all of that. It's an issue we're not going to let go. I mean, we do have some other things to discuss on the show today, but I think we're going to have some fast-moving developments that we want to talk about. We spent much of the show yesterday trying to encourage the feds to get involved in the unrest that's happening in Seattle, specifically to build some sort of larger cases around Antifa activity here so we can finally have some peace on the West Coast. No word on that yet for Seattle, but certainly in Portland, it seems like the Department of Justice is getting involved there. At this moment, three charges brought by the Department of Justice against Antifa rioters in Portland, including one that arose from this incident. So I'm going to freeze it there. You see the guy with the kind of pink and then you'll see them again, if you can keep an eye on sort of his pink, what is that, gas mask sort of thing. You see in the background there, agents dragging him away. So trying to get him into custody. Apparently he's only 5'3", so it wasn't much of an exercise for federal agents to try to grab that guy who hit one of them in the face with a stick. Can't do that. I know that's shocking to hear. So the Department of Justice putting out a press release on this yesterday, specific to this case. His name is Giovanni Joseph Brumbolo, 21 years old, charged by criminal complaint with assaulting a federal officer. It is a crime that is punishable by up to 8 years in federal prison. And hell, if we're using the standard that they used against the J6ers, then we'd be looking at, you know, 10 to 20 years in federal prison for assaulting a police officer, which, by the way, in the name of moral consistency, I always supported federal prison time for J6ers who actually assaulted law enforcement officers. But again, if you're reading the mainstream media, here's how this would have been characterized. The feds actually going after Antifa, violent Antifa activists in Portland. Here's a post from Cairo 7 News in Seattle. Get this one. Federal charges filed against three Oregon men over ICE protests and property damage. First of all, no one is charged federally for protesting. Let's be clear about that. No, three Oregon men were not charged over ICE protests. They were charged because of criminal conduct that went above and beyond the protections they enjoy from the First Amendment, very clearly. I am so utterly sick of it. And again, just to reinforce why we have to do this, why so many others have to do this, because if we just relied on mainstream news, you would literally believe the Department of Justice went after people for protesting ICE. And I was watching also, we probably won't talk about it on the show today, but some of the coverage out of Spokane. Because I didn't even know on the show yesterday that, you know, despite Bob Ferguson talking about all the peaceful people across the state that rallied on Saturday, there was violence and arrests in Spokane. I saw this dumb article and headline from some Spokane TV station, you know, actions of Spokane Police Department have raised questions about First Amendment rights. No, it hasn't. Everyone knows. There's no confusion. Everyone knows what your First Amendment rights are. And your First Amendment rights stop the moment you commit a criminal act. Period. And sometimes the government even allows you to stretch a little bit. They'll allow you to take over streets, even though that's really not a First Amendment protected activity. It's just insane. The news organizations are absolutely insane. Meanwhile, we have not seen the feds get involved in the violence that has been happening in Seattle for the past week and a half, I think, namely the brutal attack on an independent journalist, Cam Higbee. Here's the video.
Let him go. Let him go. No. Let him go. go.
So that happened during Saturday night's rioting outside the federal building in downtown Seattle. As we reported on the show yesterday, his attacker has been ID'd. There's no question in the world who repeatedly punched him so hard that it dented his helmet and concussed him. Again, his name is Jeremy Kelvin Lawson, a 33-year-old from Monroe, Washington. Goes by the alias Jack Rack, has a history of involvement with Antifa. Antifa-affiliated tattoos, no question in the world, that's exactly who it is. It was interesting how many people contacted me from the Monroe area yesterday saying, I know this guy, he, you know, stops into my business or whatever it is. Well, as of this moment, searching. Yeah, Lawson's not in the King County Jail. And that's because, I mean, SPD is still in the process of dedicating a detective to this case. Which, look, I think that the Seattle Police Department absolutely wants to do what's right here. And I know that they are going to take this case seriously. But as I said yesterday, there's no reason that you can't go out and just arrest this guy. I mean, what kind of detective work do you need to do? There's the video. It shows his face. He's been identified for you. He should be in jail by now. You're just giving him more time to flee from justice. And so something I said on social media this morning is if by the end of the week, the Seattle Police Department has not arrested or attempted to arrest Jeremy Kelvin Lawson, I think the feds need to get involved. And you can make a federal case around this. I mean, this assault arose during and because of an attack on the federal building downtown. And this was an attack on a journalist in an American city by what should be characterized as a terror organization. And so, again, just reiterating my call from the feds that we need your involvement in this, because even if, let's be clear, even if the Seattle Police Department arrests this guy, what do you think he's going to be facing? They'll give him some sweetheart plea deal as they do other rioters who have been arrested throughout the years. And they'll give him a slap on the wrist or some sort of community service. Because if you show up in front of these activist judges and you were, you know, arrested as part of a riot, it doesn't matter what you did, as long as you're a left winger and not a right winger. So they'll give him some slap on the wrist. So I think, you know, the guy down in Portland is facing 8 years in federal prison. And that was for attacking a federal agent. But still, this was a brutal assault. It was more severe, really, than what happened to the federal agent in Portland. I'm not downplaying that at all. But this is someone who should do some hard time in the penitentiary. You know what I'm saying? And as I pointed out yesterday, he lives nearby, near Monroe Prison. So, I mean, we could even do the guy a favor and say he could serve his time at Monroe. And then his family and his children, yes, he has children, that's horrifying, can come visit him there. All right, meanwhile, so we are not going to see any of this lessen, I'm afraid, unless the feds come in and they really take drastic action to try to address these extremists. There is this video going around on social media. I think it was our friend Jonathan Cho who first broke it. So it requires a little bit of background. There were two journalists who worked for, and I use the phrase journalist very loosely, okay. So two bloggers who worked for the alt newspaper in Seattle called The Stranger. And The Stranger is what it is. I mean, it's a left-wing rag. They don't really hide that, right? So they're not really journalists, sort of loose. But they were, you know, they got fired from The Stranger. I mean, for personal alleged conduct, but there were a million other reasons they could have been fired. But they ended up going out and starting, I guess it's a podcast called The Burner. So they were employed by The Stranger not too long ago, still holding themselves up as journalists. So now they do this, I think it's a podcast. I don't know if there's another element to it, but it's called The Burner. And it's become very popular among far left factions. And politicians appear on it. So they very much have aligned themselves with these two former Stranger reporters. Well, here's what they said on their show yesterday. Again, The Burner.
It genuinely seems like we shut down deportations this week.
No.
Oh, okay.
Because then they just went to other places.
Oh.
Insofar as the goal being to shut down the expedited removals at the courthouse, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's like, those ICE agents didn't die, unfortunately.
Those ICE agents didn't die, unfortunately. Ha 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 ha. You know, I might have done and said a lot of things that these people will characterize as right-wing. I've never said something that extreme. Never said or done something that extreme. And that's the thing. Like, in Seattle, you can be just right of center and you're a right-wing, you know, extremist. But you can be as loony lefty as you want, and it's totally acceptable. You don't think politicians will continue to go on their show despite the fact they just wished death on ICE agents and laughed about it? Ashley Nurbovig and Hannah Krieg. Now, you might recall Ashley Nurbovig when she was employed by The Stranger. She also wished death upon Donald Trump. And she got like a slight leave of absence, I think, but The Stranger still took her back. Remember the first time they tried to assassinate Trump? She posted, "Make America AIM Again," and got like a week, you know, sort of slightly condemnation from the ownership of The Stranger, but then she ended up getting her job back. But then her and Ashley allegedly covered up the affair of the editor of The Stranger with a candidate for Seattle City Council, or I don't know if it was really an affair, but, you know, sex sort of thing. And then they lost their jobs. So now apparently they went from losing their jobs at a blog to wishing death on ICE agents. And I think one of the really troubling things about this is they're not just covering all of this. They're actively involved in it. They are actively encouraging protests against ICE agents. They just posted on their Burner Seattle Instagram account, "Seattle courthouse support needed Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. for daily migrant court hearings. Dress casual and mask up." It says, "Don't meet up with comrades outside. Ops are marking, do not let in. Look up which offices are in the federal building to use an excuse to gain entry." So they are literally using their platform to encourage people to show up at the federal building to try to, as we've seen in the past, not observe, to try to disrupt ICE immigration enforcement efforts. And these are the same people who are wishing death on ICE agents. Now, I know that there's a free speech element of this, but where does it cross the line? If you're encouraging people to show up and confront ICE, and then you're using your platform to say that you wish ICE agents died, you know, you might still be protected under the First Amendment, but you're a real shitty person. And if these people show up and they do hurt, or God forbid, kill ICE agents, do you bear some responsibility for that? And this is what I say with, like, our show Undivided, and, you know, I can be very divisive or whatever it is, but this is common sense stuff, and I think this is what it's infuriating for, like, the 70% of us who operate in some reasonable, rational space, yet we're the ones who are called the extremists. These are the people who call us extremists. These are the people who label us extremists. The people who giggle and wish death on ICE agents. The people who brutally assault journalists in the streets. The people who light fires and take over the streets of Seattle and Portland and LA. These are the people who shout at me that I'm a fascist and that I'm a Nazi and that my views aren't in keeping with Seattle views and Seattle values. So what are Seattle values? Wishing death on ICE agents? Rioting and looting in the streets, hurting people, breaking things. Because if that's Seattle values, then yeah, I don't want any part of it. But I think the vast majority of people don't want any part in it either. Maybe they haven't been exposed to the true heinous and violent nature of people like this, and they just need to be woken up. They need to have their eyes opened, and they need to be shown clips like that to truly understand why the left in Washington State is absolutely the party of violence. Maybe they choose not to see it. I don't know. I mean, that's our mission, right? 70% of people are reasonable. How do we wake them up? How do we get them to speak up? How do we get them to push back, to be brave enough to do those things? And then, of course, to vote differently. It's absolutely insane. And we will be following up with politicians who have been on this podcast and who seem pretty aligned with them to see if they support what these two women said about wishing death on ICE agents. I'll also say, I really regret sticking up for one of them. Nicole, can you go back to Ashley, that post? So Ashley Nurbovig, she, you know, had been sort of in the news in Seattle a couple times. So after she did this, my conservative friends on X understandably went after her, but they used some baggage from her past that I thought should have been off limits. She used to be a television reporter in Montana. And while she was there, she was arrested, and there was a mugshot of her going around on the internet. She was arrested for, like, attempted burglary or something. And so, you know, again, conservative friends of mine were dragging her on X with this old mugshot of her, and she lost her job as a TV reporter in Montana. But I did a little more digging and I found out that she was trying to get her dog back from her ex. And I was like, dude, you know what I would do to get my dog back? I would do worse than breaking into an ex's house. So I sort of told my friends on X, like, hey, you know, I don't think this is the thing to drag back up. It seems like she had a problem with an ex. She wanted her dog back. I don't know if that's the end of the world, right? So I stood up for her, and she even sent me an email thanking me for doing so. Now I wish I hadn't, because now she wants ICE agents dead. So as far as I'm concerned, pull back up those old mugshots of her and rake her over the coals for it. Absolutely insane. And meanwhile, so all that's happening, and it's not accomplishing what the left wants it to accomplish. Because Donald Trump is not the kind of person who's going to give in and give up. You think Donald Trump is going to be like, okay, you know, you're assaulting our ICE agents and you're unruly on the streets, so now we won't enforce immigration efforts. No, not only does he not care, he's going to double down. And that's exactly what he's saying. And every time these blue cities act up, he just responds by saying, okay, we'll send even more ICE agents into your cities. And that's what he's saying now. This headline from the State Standard: Trump directs ICE to target three big Democratic cities for raids. Before you get your hopes up, we're not one of them. I just, like, we just keep getting left out. I don't know how loud I have to scream at the internet. Donald Trump posted on Truth Social. I won't read the full thing. It was actually much longer than this. But he said, our nation's ICE officers have shown incredible strength, determination, and courage as they facilitate a very important mission, the largest mass deportation operation of illegal aliens in history. Every day, the brave men and women of ICE are subjected to violence, harassment, and even threats from radical Democratic politicians, but nothing will stop us from executing our mission and fulfilling our mandate to the American people. ICE officers are hereby ordered, by notice of this truth, to do all in their power to achieve the very important goal of delivering the single largest mass deportation program in history. He says, in order to achieve this, we must expand efforts to detain and deport illegal aliens in America's largest cities, such as Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York. Now, that doesn't mean that Seattle isn't part of this. I do know that ICE agents here, and we've been in contact, you know, with some sources, they definitely have some, for lack of a better phrase, quotas to meet where they're out there doing this. And so think about it from the perspective of, if you're one of these people, and look, I think that there is a reasonable middle ground position that some people have, and I would say I'm like 1 foot into it, that, you know, we have a lot of industries that require, unfortunately, illegal, even immigrant labor, because it already exists there. And I mean, I would love to go back 20, 30 years and have that not be the case and have streamlined work visas to be able to get, for instance, in our agricultural community, individuals here lawfully with the correct visa doing this work. But unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are working illegally in the state of Washington. And if you take them away overnight, we are going to have some industries that are pretty profoundly impacted. And we're going to have, you know, apples dying on the vine and crops wilting in the ground. And that's just a reality that I don't think that we're going to be able to dig ourselves out of with legal or American labor overnight. So there's absolutely a reasonable conversation to be had. And I know at one point Trump was maybe rethinking the targeting of some farming businesses, et cetera. So I'm totally fine with that. Like, we can have a conversation about Trump administration, where they should be putting their priorities, et cetera. But everything that the left is doing for the people who are, you know, hold that position, or even hold the position, which a lot of them do, that none of this should be happening, that even the specific targeting of violent criminals shouldn't even be happening. I mean, that was the message of a lot of people at the No Kings protest over the weekend. So, you know, we can have all that, but you do realize that everything you're doing and who Donald Trump is and how he's going to react to that, you're actually making it much worse. The left's actions are the politicians speaking out against Trump, the rioters attacking ICE agents, doxing, all of following ICE agents home. All of that is making Donald Trump feel better than ever about carrying out mass deportations. You do realize that, right? So, like, you're being morons. You're making it worse for the people who you claim to try to be protecting. Because Donald Trump is going to double, triple, quadruple his efforts. It's the same thing with these sanctuary cities that don't believe that they believe they're protecting immigrants, illegal aliens, by having these sanctuary policies that say no cooperation between local officials and jails and the feds. And as we pointed out, and to me, it's one of the most sound arguments against sanctuary policies that everyone, right, left, and center, even the extreme ideologues, should be able to look at and recognize and say, you know what, that's right. Because as we pointed out, what happens when ICE cannot no longer just go into a jail, have a kind of peaceful, orderly transfer of an illegal alien, and then have them for deportation? Well, the jails send them out into the communities. They go back into their neighborhoods, into their homes and their families, where the chances are pretty high they're around other people who are in the country illegally. And then you got a tactical team of ICE agents who go out into immigrant communities to arrest this individual. And they're also going to arrest anyone else that person is around. So all these efforts from Democrats and progressives and socialists to stop deportation efforts are speeding up deportation efforts and leading to more deportations. Like, because these people aren't bright, you know? They're not bright. It's really wild stuff. And I don't really know what it's going to take. And I think we have Trump. Do we have a video of Trump? Yeah. So Trump was asked about his specific focus on blue cities when it comes to increased deportation efforts.
You did a post last night where you said you want ICE to really target Democrats.
Yeah, I want them to focus on the cities, because the cities are where you really have what's called sanctuary cities, and that's where the people are. Biden allowed 21 million people to come into our country. Of that, vast numbers of those people were murderers, killers, people from gangs, people from jails. They emptied their jails out into the U.S. Most of those people are in the cities, all blue cities, all Democrat-run cities, and they think they're going to use them to vote. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'll also point out, though, I saw a big ICE immigration raid at a business where I went to college in Nebraska. So it's not as if people are like, he's not carrying out any of this in red states. First of all, I think there's less illegal immigration happening and less tolerance for it in red states. So let's just be honest about that. But it is happening. I saw in Nebraska and some other areas in the heartland where there were immigration enforcement actions taking place. But yeah, most of them are going to be in blue cities, because wouldn't you go somewhere that literally says we're a sanctuary for you, and you're going to get free health care, and you're going to get help with your housing and supportive services? No one's ever going to ask you if you're in the country illegally. We'll give you a driver's license. Would you not? Like, of course. That's just dumb. Why would you go to a red state where you're going to be looking over your shoulder every day when you can be completely welcomed into society in a blue state that doesn't care what you did, where you came from, or anything like that? It's just really asinine stuff. So congratulations, Democrats and progressives and protesters, for actually getting more people deported from the country than Trump would have accomplished otherwise. Doing a great job. Doing such a great job. So maybe I should shut up about it. Maybe I should just let them continue, and it'll actually lead to more deportations. All right, coming up next, I want to take a break from the riot nonsense and Antifa idiocy for a second, because there's actually been this big movement on West Coast EV mandates that is going to have a significant impact, positive impact for the working class and for a lot of industries across the West Coast. So Congressman Michael Baumgartner of Washington State will join us next to talk about it. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe you're just at the early stages of planning and plotting your escape from Washington State, which breaks my heart every time I hear it. I don't want any of you leaving, because then sanity leaves and your vote leaves, and it just depresses me. But if you must, you know, I really can't blame you. But reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. I know Wes has been helping with some people who are moving to, I think, some of the biggest places that they're moving to: Montana, Idaho, Tennessee, and Texas, and Florida. Not a surprise, because if I were going to leave, that's probably one of the places. But he's definitely worked with a lot of people who are planning to leave the state. But if you're also just planning to sell your home, maybe get into a bigger home or a smaller home or whatever, because you have some life's changes, Wes is just awesome. He's been through all the market ups and downs. Reach out to a few real estate agents, feel them out, ask them what they can do for you. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with everything that Wes has to offer, including their really cool Listing Boost concierge service, where they'll come in, they'll help you with cosmetic upgrades to your home, only the ones that you're going to get that money back on the back end plus some. And Wes can manage those projects. You don't even have to pay for those upgrades until closing. So that takes a little of the financial pressure off of you. So reach out to Wes, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, President Donald Trump saving West Coast states from the stupidity of misguided climate policies that sound really nice but don't do anything at all. Let's talk about it. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Okay, so this requires a little bit, I think, of some background here, because it goes back to like the 1960s. I won't get too into the weeds, but here's the headline you might have seen from the Seattle Times. Washington, other states sue Trump administration for blocking EV policies. So let me try to explain it in a nutshell. Back in 1967, states like California, they wanted to have clean air regulations that were more stringent than the federal government. But they needed a waiver from the EPA in order to do it. So back in the late 1960s, the federal government and the EPA started handing out these waivers to say, okay, California, you can have some of these clean air regulations that are more strict than the federal government. And so as a result of that, states like Washington and some other states started to sort of base their policies on those regulations that California received. So part of what they're doing, phasing out in California at a really extreme pace, trying to phase out gas-powered vehicles and have these insane, not even achievable EV mandates and EV goals, similar in Washington state, where you want to incentivize and then even force people into electric vehicles, even though for a lot of people it doesn't make sense with their lifestyle. And as I've said about a lot of these environmental policies, like, I love the environment, cool, yay, you know, let's protect it. But if you love the environment, you should want the government doing things that are actually going to help the environment, A, and B, that are feasible. I mean, Jay Inslee, the climate governor, before he left office, set all these goals for 20, 30 years in the future on carbon emissions and EVs. They're not even attainable. But it sounded nice, right? And then he got to say, oh, I'm the climate governor. And then he ran for president as the climate presidential candidate, when in 20, 30 years, we're going to realize that none of that stuff is going to come to fruition. So what did President Donald Trump do? Well, in essence, they've sort of revoked these waivers and said, no, the state of California, you can't have these insane EV mandates that far exceed regulations from the federal government. Here's President Donald Trump signing the EV rollback.
Lower prices, better cars. And choice,
sense.
You can say choice. We have choice for education, and you have choice for cars now, right? Common
right.
sense
Common
is
sense.
Right. You're right. Common sense is right.
Common sense. We love it. By the way, that made it to his desk for a signature on a bipartisan basis. There are even Democrats in these West Coast states who realize that these EV mandates aren't reasonable, they're not rational, they're not attainable, and they're not fair. For a lot of working class people, driving up the cost of vehicles, taking away their choice about what kind of vehicle they want to drive. But of course, our attorney general and the attorney general in California, they only work for the ideologues. They don't work for you and I. They don't work for the working class. And so now they're suing the Trump administration over it. Attorney General Nick Brown saying transportation is the single greatest contributor to greenhouse gas pollution in Washington. Our residents understand the transition to zero emission vehicles is critical in the fight against climate change. This is the Trump administration's latest unlawful attempt to derail Washington and the nation's transition to a clean future, blah, blah, blah. So again, like, I'm all for smart climate policy, and I think most people are, but you know, when you hear that from Nick Brown and he blames it on the president, keep in mind, this was bipartisan. This was a bipartisan decision. There was even one Democratic member of Congress in our state who sided with Republicans on it, a bipartisan decision to roll back these EV mandates and to have a more common sense climate policy. So one of the big backers of this was Congressman Michael Baumgartner from Washington State's 5th Congressional District. He joins us today on Undivided. Congressman, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you, Brandy. It's always great to be on with you.
Yeah, so this EV issue, fascinating. I know Donald Trump said he'd sort of try to help us out with some of these nonsense environmental policies. So what does this mean for Washington State moving forward?
Well, it's huge for Washington State. Essentially, Governor Jay Inslee, with his environmental extreme viewpoint, had outsourced environmental policy to radical California. The net result was people in Washington State were, if not for what we just did with President Trump in Congress, people in Washington State were going to be forced to have a lack of choice in what kind of cars they drove, and were going to be forced into electric vehicles. Particularly concerning was the mandate for big rig semi-trucks, and EV semi-trucks don't practically exist, nor does the infrastructure to charge them. So if not for what we just did with President Trump to overturn this EV mandate, to take Governor Inslee and Governor Newsom's absurd policies and put them in a ball and throw them in the circular circular file, folks would have had a significant increase in their cost of goods. So it was a really big day. Probably the single biggest thing that this Congress has done so far was to overturn this California Washington EV mandate.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, now the legal wrangling begins, and of course Washington State and California are going to be part of trying to fight back against that together. Or do you think that they have a case?
Well, if they win, we might as well just shut down the Republic. I mean, this was a piece of legislation that was passed by majority votes in both the House and the Senate and signed by the president. So I have no idea, other than just posturing from an environmental extreme position, why Washington State would be suing. I mean, this is under the Constitution. This is the way that laws are supposed to be passed. And so I think as the lawsuits work their way through, that we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out. I mean, you guys had in our state, among our congressional delegation, it was a bipartisan vote. Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, down in the third, a Democrat, voted with Republicans on this. Is that correct?
That's right. And all we're saying is people ought to be able to drive the car they want to drive. If you want to drive an EV, drive an EV. If you want to drive a hybrid, drive a hybrid. If you want to drive a traditional gas combustion engine, be able to drive that. But like so many of these, the impact of so much of this environmental extremism is really aimed at working class folks, the poor, middle class. And life has gotten so expensive now, and these mandates are so detrimental to working class folks. And, you know, in America, if you're somebody that has a home that you own and you have money in the stock market, you can absorb this kind of stuff a lot better. But if you're a renter, someone that relies on used cars, somebody that doesn't have a lot of money in stocks, you know, these extreme environmental measures that push up the cost of goods, push up your groceries, they're extremely challenging. And so it's fantastic, quite frankly, that the signature achievement of Governor Inslee and Governor Newsom was essentially dismantled by what we did. And all those of your listeners that worked for Republicans to be elected should really take a victory lap here. This is what victory looks like. And it was great to be at the White House with the president for the bill signing.
Yeah, and I also would say to the kind of environmentalists, because I don't think it's a bad thing to love our planet and to want to save it and all of that, but to me, there really was no indication that these goals or mandates were even feasible. I mean, you mentioned it with sort of the EV big rigs, which like are basically non-existent, but also, you know, California had this sort of goal of, you know, a certain number of vehicles being EV, you know, one of these random, like, oh, 2035 or 2045, when, you know, the people who pass it will like be dead and gone from the earth and never have to. I mean, was it even for the people who actually thought maybe this was a good idea? I mean, there really wasn't an indication that these goals were even plausible, right?
That's right. It's posturing. It allows elected officials today to go to ribbon cuttings and pat themselves on the back and demonstrate to the extreme, the small extreme environmental base they have amongst the Democratic Party, that they're a champion for them. And look, in Washington State, Governor Gary Locke said he wanted to be the most environmentally conscious governor in our country's history. Governor Gregoire said the exact same thing. And then Governor Inslee was the most environmentally extreme governor. And so you go from a situation where, yeah, you have some pretty good stuff, but by the end it gets so extreme and so unworkable. And you think about the semi-trucks, which just don't exist. You know, Idaho and Utah were never going to build the charging infrastructure to support these trucks. And so essentially with his EV mandate on big rigs, you're locking trucks into up and down the West Coast. And that's just not how the trucking industry works. And you can say, well, okay, tough for the truckers. Well, that's the groceries you consume. That's the clothes you consume. That's the pencils that your kid uses to take to school. It literally, everything that our economy runs on is essentially moved by truck. And so it has huge implications. And so, you know, having practical reality, and I don't see it at all that Republicans should take a back seat on environmental policy, but it has to be, you know, with common sense and views, and it has to be with consumer choice. And so that's essentially what we did here. You know, for anybody but Jay Inslee and Gavin Newsom, this was a very common sense piece of legislation, but it was a huge win for the American people.
Yeah, agreed. So thanks for all your help with that. I think you got a shout out from the president. So
I did. It was fun to be at the White House. Get a little shout out from President Trump and celebrate that bill signing.
Yeah, really quickly, because I know you have you're really in solid footing on foreign affairs. You know, everybody's watching what's happening between Israel and Iran. I want to ask you first about the president's posture on this. You know, he's taken a very hard line. I mean, God, he was posting on social media for 10 million people telling them to get out of Tehran. And I was like, what do you think is the best outcome in this situation?
Well, the best outcome would be for Iran, the leaders of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which are a messianic group of people that believe that the 12th Shia Imam is going to come back and deliver a Shia domination for the Middle East and throughout the world. That's really their mindset. But the best outcome would be to give up their nuclear weapons program. And this is really, in my view, President Trump at his best. You know, the strategic ambiguity that he brings to the fore. You know, the single best thing he did in his first term was to assassinate Iranian terrorist leader Qasem Soleimani. About 20% of the Americans that were killed in the war in Iraq were killed by Iranian backed terrorist groups, and including some folks that I know. And so, these are not good guys. They're the number one supporter of terrorism throughout the country. The Iranian people in general are very Western oriented and are good people, but they have this terrible group of leaders. And if Iran were to get a nuclear weapon, it would mean that Saudi Arabia would get a nuclear weapon, Egypt would get a nuclear weapon, and Turkey would get a nuclear weapon, and probably the United Arab Emirates. And none of them would have what's called second strike capability. So they would all have the incentive to use a nuclear weapon first. And our world cannot survive those Middle East regimes all having nuclear weapons. It is too dangerous. And so it is so important that Iran not get a nuclear weapon. And I think the president, with his bold leadership on this issue and his strategic ambiguity, hopefully will put the Iranians in a situation where they will fully negotiate to fully dismantle their nuclear weapons program.
Yeah, if they're not willing, I mean, he gave them 60 days, and it was the 61st day that Israel started to carry out attacks. And so I guess, you know, if they're not willing to just, you know, put their hands in the air and surrender, how far are you willing to have the United States get involved? I mean, are you willing? Because this is an issue right now that's fracturing the Republican base and conservatives, many of whom don't want to see U.S. involvement directly, certainly no troops. So how far are you willing to go as a member of Congress?
Well, we need to do what it takes to make sure that Iran does not have a nuclear weapon. And look, I've seen firsthand, as you know, I was in both Iraq and Afghanistan. I've seen firsthand the unrealistic nature of what we tried to do under the Bush administration, which was to spread Jeffersonian democracy as a means to quell radical Islamic terrorism. And it was an effort that was not workable. But we also learned a lot from the issue. But we cannot have this naive view that we can just sit home, be isolationist, and that there's a big, scary world out there that if America is not present in it, other bad actors will be. And so, while I would love it if we could be spend our resources all at home and not have to be in places like the Middle East, it's just not realistic in terms of the threats of Islamic terrorism, how interconnected our economy. So we have real strategic U.S. interests there, and we need to make sure they don't get a nuclear weapon. And I'm heartened that the president is showing that determination as well.
So just to be clear, because of course war powers rest with you in the Congress, and this would be the first such vote that you would have to take as a member of Congress, if it came down to that, you would vote in favor of U.S. troop involvement.
We will do what it takes to make sure that Iran does not have a nuclear weapon. It is too dangerous for the world to have multiple regimes with nuclear weapons. And folks should go back and watch their Cold War era films about how dangerous nuclear weapons are. And to have nuclear weapons on the loose in countries that have vibrant Islamic terrorists, transnational Islamic terrorists, is extremely, extremely dangerous.
So that's a yes. That's a yes, just to be clear.
Yeah, we will do what it takes to make sure Iran does not have a nuclear weapon.
All right, Congressman Baumgartner, we appreciate your time. Two very different topics today, but
that's
thank you
right,
so much
but,
for taking the time.
Thanks,
to join
Randy.
Us.
Yep. Great to see you. And I'm glad that that you're looking so good as usual after what you went through with the protests in Seattle. And it's really unfortunate. We got to get Seattle cleaned up as well too. So we're working on that issue.
You know, that's an issue we need to have you back on to talk about.
Yeah, we'll
when
be back
we're going
to
get help from the feds in Seattle.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate that. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye bye.
again, Congressman Michael Baumgartner of Washington's 5th Congressional District, a Republican, and I did talk to him offline a little bit about just reiterating our call to try to get some help to deal with the violent left-wing extremism from the federal government. So I know that's something he's interested in as well, but circling back to the point of having him on, the EV mandate thing is good. I'm always worried about the courts. I don't know, you know, it's hard-pressed to find a judge that isn't a left-wing ideologue, certainly in the Ninth Circuit as well. And so I don't know if it's how the Supreme Court would rule on it, but it's a good step for now. And it's good not only for working-class people, but it's good for environmentalists as well. For people who truly care about the environment, you should want the government and all its focus on those issues to be on policies that are attainable and that actually work. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Find ways to get involved by signing up for their newsletter. Again, future42.org. All right. So, of course, we've talked about the disorder and chaos that has happened last week and a half on the streets of Seattle. But let's be clear. There's always disorder and chaos on the streets of Seattle. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Every time I see this, I want to be carried away by a spaceship. I'm ready. I'm just ready. You know, I'm ready. That's why I have a spaceship in my shot right here. Boop, boop. But because, like, you know, would you rather be carried away by aliens or have to continue to live in the hellscape of Seattle at this point? Aliens, come get me. But if you abduct me, drop me somewhere else, okay? Drop me somewhere else. So a couple things. Our friend Jonathan Cho, and I think this is important to point out, like, we're focusing on the disorder that the riots have caused in Seattle, but around that disorder is disorder that's here all the time. And that's the drug use. The open-air drug use in our business core, in our tourist core, the continuing homeless crisis that only gets worse and worse despite billions of dollars spent to make it better, and all the crime and criminal element that comes along with that, the open-air markets of stolen goods, etc. So our friend Jonathan went down to 3rd and Pike, the hub of where it all happens, to check in on things, and it's not great.
Oh, my God.
Look at that.
3rd Ave.
Good grief.
It's all back. Mayor Bruce Harrell, CM Bob Kettle, 3rd Avenue is a drug den. Oh my God, this is an utter failure.
I haven't been out here to 3rd and Pike in several weeks. Again, a lot of social unrest going on in the city.
It's all back. Dozens of fentanyl addicts just across the street, the black market of stolen goods.
I'm kind of used to it. It's unfortunate. I don't know what they're doing over there.
They're doing fentanyl, man.
Is that what they're doing?
Where are you headed right now?
I'm heading to my hotel.
You're just visiting?
Yeah, I'm just visiting.
Do you feel safe here, man? It's almost like 1 a.m., man. And
I know, but again, like in Portland's kind of similar like this. I got desensitized.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know, it's like normal. This is America, right? This is how I kind of accepted it.
No, we can't. That breaks my heart. It's not America. That's the West Coast. We shouldn't accept it. But it's been happening so long, you do get desensitized to it. I mean, that is, when I was down at the federal building last Monday, there was a tourist, because there's a hotel, kitty corner, a very nice hotel from the federal building. There's a tourist like, what's going on? And he was like blown away because he'd heard so much about Antifa in Seattle. And then he was literally seeing Antifa and he couldn't believe that it was real. And then he was commenting about how gross things were a couple blocks in the other direction from like fentanyl abuse, et cetera, et cetera. And then he's looking at Antifa here and he's like, well, where do I go? I can't go left. I can't go right. Seattle's an absolute hellhole. And it's embarrassing. And it's not like that in other places. But there's also been this news that came out. And so this is kind of tied to the riots in a certain sense, because Nicole, can we actually go to that Karen Bass thing? So you guys recall that after the first round of rioting in LA, LA Mayor Karen Bass's mind wasn't on like stopping the ongoing riots. She was worried about the World Cup, the upcoming World Cup, and shaming businesses into, oh, we got to clean up all this riot and looting mess because of the World Cup. Here's that clip.
We had launched a program called Shine LA a couple of months ago in preparation for the World Cup, and now we are called on to direct that citywide. We need people from all over the city to come to downtown and to help with this effort.
Yeah, it's never enough for Democrats and progressives to just, like, make our cities look good because we deserve that. Because citizens and businesses pay taxes and deserve to have a city that they can be proud of. And look, I blame a lot of Seattle voters, obviously, because they keep voting for people who are perfectly fine with, you know, the bowels of humanity exploding all over our streets. So I get it. But it's always something. It's always something that I would call like superficial that motivates them to quick clean things up. It's not like, hey, we used to be a world-class city. Let's get back to that place so we can truly flourish and people can be safe walking down the streets. Like in Seattle, it was the MLB All-Star Game. And that came to town, and all of a sudden, Mayor Harrell found the political will to go clear out a bunch of encampments and derelict RVs from just the area around the stadium. And then within a week, they were all back. And so Seattle, of course, is also playing host to the World Cup. But it continues to have not only kind of the riots, which I would argue would dissuade a lot of regular human beings from wanting to come to Seattle for a sporting event, but then you have to walk past, you know, people defecating on the streets, people bent over high out of their minds on fentanyl, people dying in alcoves from fentanyl, the homelessness, the harassment, the mental illness, and all of these things. So there was a pretty big, bright red flag indicator that things in downtown Seattle are not getting any better, despite what Mayor Bruce Harrell might want you to believe. So Jonathan obtained this email from Visit Seattle, which is a private nonprofit sort of tourism arm. So they're, we don't have like a tourism, government tourism entity in the state of Washington, but this is the one for Seattle. And he obtained this booking cancellation notification where it was meant to be kept internally. Please do not forward this or its informational content, da, da, da. But it said that the Microsoft Corporation canceled its plans to hold its Build 2026 conference in Seattle. And that's huge. That's like tens of thousands. That's probably more than $100 million collectively that that conference would have brought in to Seattle's economy. So as far as the rationale goes, this is, again, part of this internal email that Visit Seattle put out. So what they'll do is if a conference cancels, they'll send an email to the business community saying, hey, this happened. We're sorry because we know you were probably counting on, you know, the business that comes in from these conferences to try to sustain yourselves throughout the year. So they let them know, and they'll let them know why. So it says Microsoft, one of the reasons they claimed they hadn't gained their footing since COVID, which, okay. But then they went on to say, in 2025, another contributing factor was the leadership and attendee experience walking the convention core from the Hyatt Regency to the ARC building on 8th Street. This is their experience during a previous Build conference. The customers, and in this case, the customers is Microsoft, cited the general uncleanliness of the street scene, visibility of individuals engaging in drug use, and unhoused individuals, including the reoccurring tent in the ARC tunnel. Microsoft has previously addressed these concerns, and Visit Seattle has been working actively with SPD, the Downtown Seattle Association, and the CARE team and others on trying to solve them. Unfortunately for Build, it was a contributing factor to their final decision to move out of Seattle. So the city of Seattle just lost one of the biggest, most lucrative conventions that it has, that it can get. And still, nobody seems to care, but also, we can't just care because of Build. You know, we can't just want to get, and I'm sure Visit Seattle and the business community is very upset by this. But that's how we get in this death loop when we only care because of the NBA All-Star Game. We only care because of the World Cup. We only care because of the Microsoft Build Conference. Or we only care because it's cruise season and the cruise ships are coming into town. And then the rest of the year, they're more than fine with the filth and squalor and criminal activity. Because that's the mindset of elected leaders. Is they only care when people are looking, when the microscope is on. Because then they're going to be held accountable for it and people are going to see and all of these things. So they'll sweep it away. And for citizens and taxpayers and business owners, well, screw you. And again, goes back to this. Seattle voters vote for this. Seattle voters literally sent a socialist to represent their interest, a literal socialist to represent their interests in the state house in Olympia. It's like, I don't feel bad for them per se, But I always go back to, so why do we care, right? Why do we care about Seattle? Seattle is the economic engine of our state. We do rely on Seattle's tax revenue, et cetera, on the tourism that comes into Seattle to help support the surrounding areas. So when they don't even seem to care about themselves and the mayor doesn't seem to care unless there's a special event, it ultimately does hurt all of us, and it hurts our reputation and our standing in the world for people who might want to come here. So it's embarrassing. So chaos, rioting, chaos every day. Which one's worse? I think they're tied. Honestly, I think they're tied. All right, coming up next, this one is just truly special. California wants the feds to pay for the damage that was caused by left-wing rioters. Yeah, I wonder how the Trump administration is going to take that request. Probably not well. First, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital will have a new episode of Doge Watch out tonight, by the way. I know Zach was traveling last week, so we didn't hear from him. We'll be caught up on all the happenings with Doge, the rescissions package that they're voting on, the maybe olive branch Elon Musk extended Donald Trump. But Zach Abraham and his team are working around the clock to protect retirement portfolios against risk. A lot happening globally, including what's happening between Israel and Iran. So how does any of this affect your retirement portfolio, your allocations, etc.? It's always just good to get a second opinion. So if you're not sure, if you've been worried about the tariffs and the ups and downs in the markets and how your retirement dream is being protected and cared for, you know, and you have somebody maybe just managing your money passively, it might be time for a second opinion. Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital can do that for you. They offer a free Know Your Risk portfolio review. They'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement. Make sure it is properly protected by getting a second opinion. Schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review right now. Do it right, well, after the show. Do it after the show. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Don't put it off. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay, couple crazy things happening in California as we dip into some national news. This one's wild. Democratic State Rep Norma Torres wants the federal government to pay for some of the damage that rioters caused on the streets of LA.
I am demanding full accountability and reimbursement for the local cost incurred, including injuries to local officers and damages caused by the chaos unleashed when the Trump administration recklessly deployed the military and ICE agents into our communities. They are the ones who created this unrest.
How can
they are the ones that need to foot the bill.
Oh my, how can you say that with a straight face? And I'm sorry, she's a U.S. representative, not a state representative in California. I mean, how can you say that with a straight face? And as we've said, you guys know this, there was already chaos and violence and vandalism and looting before Donald Trump sent the feds in. And what do you do all the other times that people have rioted and looted in the streets? You have to pay for that. This time you're trying to find some weird way, connecting the dots, to blame Donald Trump for it so he can pay for it. To that, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy says, kick rocks. That's not happening. He sent out a post, the U.S. DOT will not fund rogue state actors who refuse to cooperate with federal immigration enforcement, and to cities that stand by while rioters destroy transportation infrastructure, don't expect a red cent from DOT either. Follow the law or forfeit the funding. Yeah, and I mean, it's not the federal government's fault that California is already in a pretty significant budget crunch and doesn't have the money available to clean up the mess that they allowed rioters to make. So that's insane. Second insane thing. This is a state senator, Jesse Araguen. I already called him a moron on X because it's about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. He wants to pass a state law in California that will make it a misdemeanor for a member of law enforcement to cover their face.
You know, people covering their faces, impersonating police officers, it erodes trust in law enforcement and it undermines community safety. That's really what this bill is about.
Is it?
And I think many law enforcement officials, legitimate law enforcement officials, would welcome, putting in safeguards to ensure transparency and accountability. And I think the concern is a lot that's happening. There are a lot of people who are engaged in these enforcement actions, and we don't know, are they federal? Are they contractors? Are they local law enforcement? And so we're requiring that people not have to wear masks except for some very limited exceptions, and that there be identifying information ensures that we know who is involved here. It's also critical to uphold our state and local laws, including our our sanctuary law, SB 54, which says that local law enforcement are not going to be involved in immigration enforcement. So this is, I think, furthering the state's efforts to ensure legitimate law enforcement purposes and to protect Californians.
No, it's furthering the state's efforts to vilify police. And you know that. And I love how he tries to couch it in, oh, this is because we don't want people to pretend to be law enforcement officers by covering their face, which literally makes no sense at all. And that's also not what it's about. And there are already laws against impersonating a police officer. Doesn't make any sense in the world. This is about they don't like that ICE is out there covering their faces during immigration enforcement. And why do you think ICE is covering their faces? Because ICE agents are being doxxed. ICE agents in Washington state are being followed home. I mean, we have what used to be fairly mainstream journalists in Seattle who are laughing because they're calling it unfortunate that ICE agents aren't being killed. And you don't want them to be able to cover their face. And I don't even think that you have any say over whether federal agents do cover their faces in the state. And when it comes to blue state police officers, there's already all these rules and regulations in place for them to properly identify themselves. If you ask for a badge number, they have to give it to you. They have to have their name visible, their name or their badge number visible. I mean, the Washington State Patrol, their badge number, their number is literally their license plate. Look at a Washington State Patrol vehicle. It has a short number on it. That's their badge number. So you know if you see a state patrol vehicle on the roadway, immediately what their badge number is. So let's not act like there aren't already a bunch of laws and regulations in place, particularly in blue states that went through this whole police accountability phase, that make it very easy for civilians to get identifying information on police officers. This is about you want ICE agents to show their faces because you want your little Antifa minions to be able to take pictures of them and spread those pictures on the internet so they can go and threaten and dox them and harass them and their families. And that makes you a horrible person. It does. And notice that they have nothing to say about the masked militants. Why not propose a law banning masks during a protest? Well, because it would be unconstitutional. But why not, if it's a riot and it's deemed an unlawful assembly, why not pass a law that also says that you can't have a face covering? So you're perfectly fine looking the other way when people who are actually assaulting federal agents, who are assaulting police, who are assaulting journalists, who are destroying buildings, when they hide their identity. But when the people who are tasked with enforcing our laws, who are doing so lawfully, legally, cover their faces because they're getting death threats, you as a California lawmaker want to unmask them. Yeah, it just makes you a terrible person. Like, you're not a good person at all. And I would love to have an environment. You know, I want police to be accountable. I want federal agents to be accountable. I don't want to live in a police state. If there's been instances of overreach, I like to think that I've spoken out about those. I would love to have to live in an environment where police don't feel the need to have to cover their faces at all. But because of the environment Democrats have fostered, that is not the reality for ICE agents across our country. It's just insane. These people have lost their minds. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our subscriber poll, your thoughts on whether you'd support direct troop involvement in Iran. First, if you haven't made time to do so already, we've been talking about First Mark Insurance for a couple years now, and that's because you could be saving thousands of dollars a year. I just don't know what you're waiting for. You don't have to wait for a renewal notice. Remember, if you cancel your current insurance, you get a refund for that. First Mark can help you out with it, and then you can proceed forward with insurance that better suits your needs, and hopefully you can get at a better price. And First Mark Insurance is going to be able to help you figure that out. Our friend Brock Heward, former UW quarterback and sports radio host, says for his family, having First Mark on their team has been essential.
The word that comes to my mind is a word I use a lot on my sports show, and that is connective tissue. It's important in team building. It's important as players in a locker room to be connected to others. And when it comes to insurance, it's so complicated. It's so stressful. You just don't even want to deal with it. And that is where the connective tissue of having a pro, having a broker, having a partner, and most of all, having a teammate like First Mark Insurance, it was the best connective tissue we could find.
Yeah, I mean, I literally never think about my insurance. The only reason I do is because I do these ad spots for it. It's the only time I think about my First Mark Insurance. Other than that, totally hands off. They're just dealing with everything for me. It's like the most stress-free insurance.
I actually got asked by a rental car company what my insurance company was because they just write it down on your insurance form. I didn't know.
Because first Mark Hamill
deals with it. And that's like, so funny. Oh, I got to go and check.
I have literally no idea. I just know that I'm paying much less and I have much better coverage and I'm happy with it. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Become a member of the First Mark family today. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, daily subscriber, show, poll, Patreon, locals, and X. Thank you to our paid subscribers for supporting our work. We appreciate you. I asked you if you would support direct U.S. troop involvement in Israel's efforts to cripple the nuclear capabilities of Iran, yes or no? And then I got all these smart asses saying, well, you got to be more specific, Brandy. What do you mean by direct U.S.? You know what I mean. Come on. Like, let's not take it literally. I only have so many spaces to be able to come up with a question. Really judgy about my polls lately, people. Nicole, what do you say?
I mean, they can't have nukes.
Yeah.
They can't have nukes. And because I think we would be a target. So I guess I trust the people that know more about this than I do.
Well, it was interesting when Congressman Baumgartner, who said they don't have second strike capability. So they mm-hmm. would be the ones to do it first. And then, you know, by then the damage and the death is done.
Right.
I'm really torn on this because I don't want our troops involved in another war. I realize that there's a reality of, you know, mm-hmm. being on a planet with people who wish to do us harm. So I guess I would never say no, absolutely under no circumstances. But it sounds like the real issue comes into play with some of their deeper nuclear capabilities that require U.S. technology, like these bunker bombs. And I'm not an expert in this arena by any sense. But it's like, I thought we already gave some of those to Israel. So can't Israel just use the bombs we gave them to bust some bunkers? 50-50 split on X right now. American on X says, we cannot allow Iran to obtain nuclear weapons. For decades, Iran has threatened the United States. I think of a danger. Think of the danger if they had a nuclear weapon. Can Deegan, reluctantly and only to drop bunker buster bombs on Iran's underground nuclear weapon factories, would rather alone sell those bombs to Israel. Reason, if Iran gets nuked, it will nuke Israel. Yeah, Israel, I mean, the United States can absolutely eviscerate and smoke anyone who mm-hmm. comes after us, right? And Israel, honestly, they've already gotten air dominance over Iran. They have, you know, some pretty good capabilities. And a lot of that was given to them by the United States. But they're really close. And there is a chance that the response from Iran would be devastating for Israel. All right, let's see here. Most people on Patreon saying no. Amelia, we're currently helping to defend Israel, which I completely agree with. Iran has threatened to retaliate against us, which would definitely need a hands-on answer to. The question I ponder is, where is Saudi Arabia in this mess? Most of the Middle East fear Iran and their potential nuclear capabilities, yet I have not seen them publicly join the U.S. to speak against this. Before going all in, I would like to make sure we are supported by other countries in the region. Norm says Iran is a loose cannon and they need to be kept in check. Yeah, and I mean, thought process completely changes if Iran goes after, you know, our interests overseas, U.S. military installations, then, you know, all bets are off. And I think a lot of conservatives who are reluctant obviously would feel much different. We have to defend ourselves. Ace says, I said no, but if it did happen, I do not think it would take very long. Very long in terms of the U.S. involvement could be brief. But I mean, you know, we've gotten into so many forever wars that, like, what does brief look like and what is the end result? When does the U.S. involvement cease? Is it just when their nuclear capabilities are destroyed? Is it until, you know, the Iranian people decide who they want to run their country? What does that look like? Are we engaged in nation building? Why? This is a tough decision. I voted yes, but only as a last resort. I never believe U.S. should be on the offense. Our military action should always be defensive and prevention of nuclear war. So yes, if it calls for our military to intervene to prevent the nuclear war, I think U.S. needs to, unfortunately, get involved. Let's do a couple more. Tony, only airstrikes. I know the Americans have bunker buster bombs, but I don't know if Israeli pilots can drop them without any practice. If not, then it's up to the United States. Yeah, and I think we're at the point in our military capability that, like, on the ground troops is probably not necessary. Andy says, yes, the world would be safer with a non-nuclear Iran. But if it's not Iran, who is it next? Who's the next nuclear threat that you're looking at? Just never ends, right? Never ends. And that's why I'm glad I'm not Donald Trump, because I do not want to have to make these decisions. And did he even sleep yesterday?
I know.
He was at the G7. They told him to fly him home. And then he had a meeting with his national security team in the Situation Room. And even Democrats were like, does this man sleep? Does he literally have a disorder where he does not have to sleep?
I mean, no, he mentions that in his book, that he doesn't sleep much. And so he said, I think it was, I want to say he said 3 to 4 hours a night.
That's insane.
Yeah, something like that. And he talks about not sleeping much.
Oh, he's so old and he operates so well. Mm-hmm. And that just shows you, like, age is really just a number. Because you compare him to Joe Biden.
Oof.
So that's why I don't support putting an upper limit on the age of the presidency per se, unless you're going to say it's like 85, you know, whatever. But it's because, like, the difference between, I mean, I know some 90 people in their 90s who are sharp as a tack.
Right.
Totally fit and capable. So I just don't think that's fair. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I got a little off the rails there, but that's how I feel.
But okay. He was sending out tweets all night or yeah. Truth posts. And yeah, I don't know when he sleeps.
I don't know. All right. Some comments from the show today. Old Sub Sailor with a super chat. The Tifas and the Marxist Dems want to collapse the state's infrastructure so they can build a Marxist communist mecca. That would be a hellish place. But aren't we already kind of in that? Little Napoleon Ferguson supports this because he's addicted to power. Boo Boo Bear, $10 for the cussing jar yesterday. Yeah, we've had to retire that jar. I think it would be far too full this year. Marco.
But thanks for padding it.
But thank
we'll
you.
Still, we'll yes. still donate.
Yes. Marco, it's the Communist Manifesto. Remember those old farts from the 50s that tried to warn us? Yeah. All right, YZ Mike, destroying from within has been in place since the 50s. The only person brave enough to try to stop it was Kennedy, and look what it got him.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Dead. Yeah, that's
interesting.
let's see. Racing and fishing. The left always cry about paying a living wage, and now they don't want illegals deported because they work cheap. Make it make sense. It is interesting, right, how they work hard to push the wage up in a state like Washington, and then they freak out when that roofing company was raided. And as we pointed out, you know, the roofing company guy came out and said basically, in so many words, it would drive prices up. So you're telling me you'll have to pay people more to work there? So is that really progressive if you're specifically getting people to work there who you can pay much less? I don't know. Just seems a little hypocritical to me. Rick Johnson, Bob Ferguson is exactly who we thought he was, and perhaps worse. Master of deflection, no accountability, sits silent while violence occurs in our state. Yeah, he's the worst. Absolute worst. And it is worse than Jay Inslee, because Jay Inslee lacked intelligence. And so Bob's smart. He knows what he's doing is wrong. He knows what he's doing is hypocritical. But he does it anyway because he knows he can get away with it. You know, I think Jay Inslee knew those things to a certain extent, but he also wasn't the brightest bulb. And I don't know if he had enough intelligence to be quite as, is that mean? I don't know if he had enough intelligence to be quite as intentional in his,
yeah.
What do I say? You know,
policy.
I mean, when he said, I knew about CHOP, I didn't know about CHOP. It's like, I think he was just confused, you know,
he
I don't think he was lying.
Acted dumb
I think
he
was just
he might
confused. Yeah. Bob Apple, Democrats are creating a shortage of red lipstick, but the garish appearance is only going to help them lose elections. Yeah, I put in the show description that trying to fix Seattle is like putting lipstick on a pig, but they can't even do that successfully. They can't even successfully put lipstick on the pig. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. I want to thank you, Brandy and Nicole. As a school bus driver, I can listen to your show and not worry. Very bad language isn't spoken. Which I could get in trouble for. Wait, I can listen to your show.
Wait,
and not
is
worry.
That sarcastic? Because
you have to worry. So I hope you're not listening to our show on the bus. Old school sci-fi nerd, troops doesn't mean ground soldiers. Air and naval power, cannon would be the answer. You know, but I think Iran takes that in the same way, right? So I'm grouping all of that together. Jeffrey, I was disappointed that Congressman Baumgartner didn't answer the question definitively, yes or no. Well, I tried. Well, I said, use the word yes, but I think he was saying, yes, I would. He just didn't, for
right.
some reason,
well,
use the
I
word
don't
yes.
think any of them want that, just as none of us right. do. And so I think that that's his way of kind of not encouraging that or thinking that's going to be the solution. But, yeah, gavel.
Did you see this gift I got in the mail?
I did. Very fun.
So a couple Brandy. Weeks ago, I was talking about like how hard I'd use my gavel at congressional hearings. And I was like, I want one of those. Ask and you shall deliver, Kathy Carr, Brandy. Oh, ask and you shall receive. Well, I don't think you actually asked for this, but you sort of expressed a desire for one. Thank you for all you do. It is all just so very amazing. to your listeners, both you and Nicole. Thank you, Kathy. So now, sweet. Whenever Nicole's yapping over there, yikes. I'm going to be like, shut it.
I knew it was going to be used against me.
It is. Whenever she's not paying attention to me.
Pay attention. Yeah, when I can't hear you.
Well, because she has a trouble hearing. So sometimes I have to repeat myself. Uh-huh, but now, if I don't think you heard me, I'm just going to.
Yeah, did you hear?
Okay, I'll stop. Thank you, Kathy. That was very nice of you. All right, last one. Bad Ray Sabon. Striking is simple, but stopping the chaos is difficult and impossible. I'm assuming that you mean what's happening in Iran. Talk about chaos, though. Donald Trump just saying everyone should leave Tehran. There's like 10 million people in Tehran, and it was like,
right?
And they did start leaving. It was
I know. Did
wild,
you see that? I'm trying to make sure we don't have my internet's being a little funky right
oh,
now.
Is
we
it?
Might have some more
super chats. Super okay, chat. Let me just see because Can we have a good closing it? Sanity check. Let me see. Sergeant Pickles, please talk about Congress selling millions of acres of public lands. Selling our children's future to the highest bidder is truly vile. I saw that today. I'm going to look into it. We'll maybe talk about it tomorrow or Thursday. Diana, you do realize telling these people you are making it worse for illegal immigrants is a waste of breath. They don't care about these people. They don't want to lose their maids, gardeners, etc. Well, they're just looking for reasons to cause chaos. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they don't care about immigrants. They're just there to break stuff and light stuff on fire and hurt people.
Just in general, I mean, with the Minnesota shooter and stuff, I was having this discussion earlier because everybody, you know, we talked about yesterday, they're looking for a side. They want it to be the other side.
Right.
But these people on the far left and far right, they don't want America. The people on the far extremes of both, they don't want what we have in this country. So I don't even like that we're like far left, far right, like because that's not what they don't want any of it.
They're just extremists.
They're just extremists. Yeah. They don't want what we currently have set up in this country. And so we got to get out of this, you know. Like, blame the other side. Hope it's the other side, whatever. Right. Just hope that nobody does it.
There is no other side with that. They're just against us. They're against, you know.
And we need leaders to just look at them and be like, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Done. Doesn't matter what side they lean towards, I guess.
Yeah. Call us Pollyannish, but we just want love, you know. All right, Nicole, thank you so much. Done. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I'm going to use this way too much. Yeah. I think it's very trouble. It's very jarring for people listening in their cars, not knowing. If you were listening in your car, it was It's a gavel. So I should have explained that better. All right. In our closing sanity check, we talked about, you know, why do we do this, right? Why do I go down to some ICE facility and know that I'm probably going to get targeted and go anyway? Well, we've seen how bad the coverage from the mainstream media has been. So if you don't have people who are willing to do this, things are only going to get worse because then you have the media saying, oh, ICE is gassing peaceful protesters and all this nonsense. Joe Rogan said something on his podcast that was very similar in this vein about when he realized, like, oh, maybe I, because he didn't ever want to be considered a news source, but then he sort of embraced it like, I kind of have to be.
And I had a bunch of friends that had horrible side effects, including one of them who is a young guy who is a pacemaker now.
Yeah.
His heart stopped beating for like 9 seconds at a time and he would black out. It was wild shit was happening. And I was like, I don't understand why this isn't on the news. I don't understand. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm the news. I'm like, I have to be the news.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the news. I like talking shit. I like having a bunch of comedians here. We have laughs. We get silly. You know, have a few drinks. Watch some funny videos. Crack each other. Have fun. Or scientists. I like to have fascinating people in here. Tell me how the cosmos was formed. I don't want to be someone who distributes information to the masses that's been lied to. That's not... I don't have any lofty goals like that. Like, I want to be the one who tells the truth. And that's not what I do.
Yeah.
I'm just a curious person who talks to people.
Yeah, and the media used to be curious as well, and they've lost that, and that has been a critical reason for their downfall. So grateful for people like Joe Rogan, who will tell the truth about things like vaccines and other issues. All right, that has been today's sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. We appreciate all of you. I know our audience is growing quite a bit. There is room for everyone amongst our homies. We do appreciate your watching the show, sharing clips, helping us grow, because the more we grow, I think the more people we reach, we can start to turn at least Washington State around and hopefully the rest of the West Coast and just try to get things back on track. That's what we want. We don't need some radical sort of movement. We need the people who already exist in a common sense space to wake up and get involved and start pushing back and start voting different, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you have not signed up to support our show already, that's how we're funded, $5 a month at a time from subscribers. You can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show for $5. We make it super simple. All right, we'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.